Over the course of my life and career, I've discovered the power of consciously investing in mindset and personal development. It has been a true game changer for me in my personal and professional life, and I'm extremely excited that you decided to join us today to take one step forward in your own life. Most of my breakthroughs have come from one-on-one conversations. We created this show to bring you those unfiltered conversations each and every week. Hello, hello, and welcome back to the Connected Mindset Live. I'm your host, Greg Tomchick. Thanks so much for joining us for another week's episode. It's really an honor to be able to host a show like this, to talk about many of the topics that you guys care about most, and most of those topics are things that I care about deeply as well. So it's a huge win-win. Looking forward to today's discussion. But before we get there, today's episode is presented by Blokes. So Blokes is a men's health company, somebody that I know at a personal level, but I've used them. And when I use a service, it's something that I try to build trust with, just like I do in my cybersecurity business with folks that I work with. Their assessment process for the way that they look at the body is the most in-depth I've ever seen. I was a professional athlete. I had PhDs and doctors all around me all the time, and they never were able to get me to that level of understanding of my body. So if you're a guy out there, and I know they also do women as well, the test that they provide is next level. I definitely recommend you check them out. If you mention Connected at checkout, they actually give you 15% off that first test, and just see what's going on in your body. A lot of times we can feel it, but we can't pinpoint it and get to the root cause. So I want to give you guys that as a thank you for joining the show today. But without further ado, let's go ahead and dive in. Mr. Taza Shan, thanks so much for joining us once again on the Connected Mindset Live.
Part two, man. Thank you for having me back. I always forget how fire your intro music is, because when I watch episodes, I'll skip it. No offense, but I'll skip it to get to the conversation. But I had to sit here and listen to the intro, and I was like, man, I forgot. Greg's intro is fire.
I appreciate that, man. It's not always how you start. It's how you finish in the way I look at things. But you know what I try to do periodically is put together different episodes and make a compilation. So it's always shifting and changing. And I think that's, you know, one of the things we all go through from a personal level, right? We're like putting all these experiences together and trying to make the puzzle fit together. And I know you had something recent in your life change. Becoming a father. So congratulations on that.
Thank you, brother. I'm in the dad club along with you and many other great men who have come before us. So thank you. Sir.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's a huge, it's a huge promotion in my mind. I think it's kind of like a life promotion, and it's one that, you know, we obviously choose, but, it's something that stretches us. So I want to bridge the gap between our last conversation. This is before, you know, pre-fatherhood. You know, we were talking about helping people transition out of sports, helping, you know, all the journey that you went through to get where you are today. And, you know, what's changed since? You know, that's a huge transition. So how has your life kind of mission and everything you're doing in life changed, you know, since this miracle decided to come in and make its appearance to your life?
Yes, sir. Well, I like how you positioned it as a promotion, because it definitely feels that way. It's like, to me, a level up in manhood. And I don't say that from a standpoint of like, oh, because I have a child now, I'm more of a man than other men who don't have children. But what I mean is, I feel like more of a man personally, just having to be more intentional with my time. Just, excuse me, I wasn't getting choked up right there. I'm just recovering from a cold. They're like, dang, this dude is crying 5 minutes into the episode. Chill out.
Not yet. We might get there, but.
We just might. Sometimes I'll find myself looking at my son and getting emotional just because, like, it's still surreal. He's coming up on 4 months, and I know you know this, Greg, the biggest change for me has been being super, like I said, super intentional about my time. Not just like, how can I make sure I get business done while also being a father, but how can I make sure that I'm not getting business done at the expense of being a father and being a good husband to my wife as she's recovering and trying to figure out being a mom. So a promotion is the perfect way to position it. And I do feel like I've been promoted in life and on so many different levels.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Yeah. It's an out of body experience. And my, you know, at least from, you know, what I came from, you know, two kids later, each kid's different. The first one's the hardest, but and when you look back at that first one, it's almost like something's connected to your soul that is out of your body that is trying to grow and survive, and it's looking to you to help it survive. So it almost makes us look deeper into ourselves. That's what I'm, you know, on lately about parenting is they're almost a mirror into me. Like they see through all of the stuff, you know, all the walls, all the things that Greg has tried to put up to put this facade up, like you know, I got to be this person for the world. And they just see right through that. And as they start to talk and use words, it's like their first words are like the things that you almost needed to hear. And it just, it's out of body experience. I heard you say on another show, my team and I are watching some of your previous shows, and you're talking about you almost sometimes look at your kid and you see like the grown up version of the kid. And it's fascinating because it's like you look at them and they're almost like changing by the second as you look at them. Expressions, you know, they're growing, they're changing, you know, you're going through hard times with them, they're crying, then they're happy, then they're laughing. So it's awesome, man.
Yeah, that to me, like, I'll look at him to your point and try to imagine what he'll look like as an adult, or even like, what's he going to look like when he's one or two or three or four. And I'll just go through the paces and try to see how far into the future I can imagine. And it is a very trippy experience, like trippy in a good way. And I think it, in a way, it kind of has made me, not that I was ever afraid of death or anything, but it's almost made me like embrace my own mortality. Like, I think it's actually cool that this guy will go on, my son will go on to have his own family and grow up and be a man. And eventually I'll be long gone and he'll be living on and he'll have kids. And I just think that it really helps you understand when you create a life, you're like, oh, this is actually the meaning of life. It helps you grasp it in a different way when you're holding that in your hands. Side note, did you cry when your first one was born, or like when either of your kids were born?
I think like the cutting of the umbilical cord, I cried more for the second one. I think the first one I was so shocked of what just happened that I was just like, I didn't know what to do. I was like froze because it was like this thing just came out of, you know, someone that I care about so much. And it took that long to grow this baby. And I remember like they were like touching his eyes and like, you know, trying to, you know, they prepped the baby after. And like, I almost was like, I can't let that, like, I was like already protecting him. Like, it was like already like a protective feeling of like, you know, don't tug them too hard because they're used to, you know, birthing and facilitating births all the time. So they're like smacking his back. I'm like, whoa, you know, be gentle. So it's like, you're already protecting them before they even are like, you know, they're obviously taking that first breath, but before they even are open their eyes, you're already trying to, you know, be that protective nature being for them.
It's crazy to feel that for the first time, right? Mm-hmm. Like for me, that happened when we went to our first ultrasound. And so I was just expecting to see like a picture on screen, man, they put the, I don't know what the tool is called, but they put the thing on the ultrasound tool on there and they had like, maybe I'm just tripping, but it sounded like surround sound speakers in that office. And I heard the heartbeat for the first time and I wasn't expecting to hear a heartbeat. I got nauseous. I had to leave the room because it was so loud and so fast that it's exactly what you were saying. I almost started freaking out. Like, why is his heartbeat so fast? Is something wrong? Is the ultrasound machine bothering him? Is this hurting him? And I had felt that protective instinct for the first time, like you said. Mm-hmm. So that's funny you bring that up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's out of body. It's like, it's a feeling that we can explain, but until you feel it in your own heart and soul, it's just like, it like shocks your whole nervous system. I've done a lot of episodes on the nervous system and how it impacts how you think. And it just like hits to the core. If you think about like the core of the way you feel things, like it like sends like a good knife right through it. And it's like, you better be ready. So,
you said you cried more during the second birth?
Yeah, because I was more like, I knew what to expect, but it was like a different, so my first one was a boy, the second one was a girl. And it's just, you can almost tell like when they're when they're out of the womb, like when they're born, like girls and boys are different from that time on. Like they talk a lot about Venus and Mars and how different the connection is. And a dad to a girl and a dad to a guy, it's just like a different type of connection. So it was like, it was more of an emotional wave that went through my body. With the boy, it was like, I need to protect you. Like, I need to start like kind of grooming you to protect yourself, like already, even though he's not even conscious. So
that's interesting, man. I when you talk about that wave, I felt that with my boy, and then the protectiveness too when he was born. And it was like, I've never cried like that before. And I don't mean like the amount I was crying, because I didn't really cry that much, but it was kind of like a convulsion. Mm-hmm. One, because when he came out, the first thing I'm doing, of course, is like, whoa, I can't believe this is happening, like you said. Mm-hmm. And then I'm looking to see, all right, does he have all his fingers and toes? How's he look? Like, is everything normal? Okay, check. That's good. My wife is good. And I think that just relief that they're here, they're healthy, everything's good. And then like the fact that it's so surreal that they're here, like it just started going through me, and I was almost kind of like hyperventilating crying, but only lasts for like 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. It was kind of like a like one of those. And then I was like, oh my God, is anyone looking at me? I kind of get it together, Tosh, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Almost. It's a lot of ramp up too. Like you know, you're ramping up for it for 8-9 months, and then, you know, you're in the hot, like you have to, you know, either rush or you're going to the hospital, you know, smoothly. And then they're like, you know, 10 hours till, and then you're contracting, and then there's like all this ramp up to it, and you're just feeling these emotions pile on. And I think once they, you know, are here and you're like, they're healthy, I think it just all releases. For, you know, it sounds like that's kind of the experience you had.
100%. Yeah, definitely a release for sure. Mostly, like you said, the fact that he was healthy and everything was good, you know?
Mm-hmm. So yeah. How old now?
He will be 4 months.
4 months.
Yeah. In about a week. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's coming up on 4 months. So he's starting to make a lot. He's not talking yet, but he's making a lot of noise. Mm-hmm. A lot of sounds, a lot of laughter.
Yeah,
that's like the highlight of my day.
Yeah,
you know, you take a break from, like, if something's going wrong, or I'm in this office all day working on something, and if I have a moment of frustration or I need a break, I'll just go out there and like play with him and get a laugh, and I'll be like, oh, mm-hmm, I'm recharged now. Yeah. All I need to see was a laugh. I'm ready to go back to battle, you know?
Yeah. How is the, you know, balancing of time? I think that's the hardest, you know, one of the hardest shocks, and we'll get to kind of the, you know, what it's brought about creativity wise. But, you know, how has it been for you to balance your time, you know, both coming from athletics, like we're used to having a schedule and other people scheduling it, and, you know, having the mindset of like grind, 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 and, you know, get it done. How has that been?
So I know you and I talk about this often, like you and I are both pretty far removed from the days of being a competitive athlete. So we've got it dialed in now. Like we know ourselves, we're grown men. We know how to create our own structure and our own schedules to the point where I had it locked in, man. Like I know myself, I have my routine. I know when I need a break. I know when I can keep pushing. And then you have a child and your whole routine is disrupted. Not to mention the sleep deprivation on top of that. It's better now, which, you know, those early, like the first month or two or more, sleep deprivation is real. Like I've never experienced, even though I was playing football, I was delirious. So in terms of this is, what I've come to is that I don't necessarily need to have a set schedule that I stick to, because it's always going to be interrupted. My wife, credit to my wife for doing a great job of like letting me handle business while she watches the baby. But there are times where she needs to do something, like, as you know, like take a shower, or maybe she just needs to get out the house or go to a yoga class or something like that. And in those moments, what I'm learning is just to surrender. Like, keep your routine, keep planning things as you normally would, but understand that at some point there's going to be a disruption. And I don't want to call, like, you know, watching my son a disruption, but I mean a disruption in what my normal pattern or flow would be. And so I've learned to embrace that. Because I'll be honest, Greg, early on, like the first month or two of parenthood, these past couple months, I'm starting to figure it out. But the first month or two, and I don't think a lot of people talk about this, there was almost like a resentment, like, not a resentment of my son, like I'm glad he's here, don't get me wrong, but a resentment of, man, this is what my life looks like now. I can't get after it like I used to. Should I have waited? And all these thoughts start to come into my mind, versus if I can just take a moment to, like you told me on an audio message not too long ago, we were texting, stop, breathe, be with my son, realize, look, you can't get anything done right now. Just be with your son. Why be holding your son and be thinking about what you should be working on business-wise rather than just 100% being with your son and enjoying this moment? So that's been the biggest thing to me. The word surrender keeps coming to mind because I've had to learn how to surrender to just moments where he needs something from me. And no, it doesn't matter what my goals are. I need to be focused on my son right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's critical just to be able to turn off the light switch. I almost think about it. Like, it's kind of like, you know, our brains are going so fast because we're competitive and we want to get things done and we want to make, you know, the things we're doing, you know, continue to progress. But it's, for me, it's a, you know, kids have been a good leveler. Like, it hasn't always been like, it feels like a leveler. But when I get too high, that, you know, they bring me down. When I get too low, like, they bring me up. So it's kind of like they keep me on that baseline level that, you know, I need as a business owner, because if I'm way too high and nobody knocks me down, like, you know, then the crash is going to be even harder. So they kind of like level me out. I think about like a heartbeat, like they kind of level my heartbeat out, you know, heart rate variability and all these different technical terms, but they really help to bring me, bring me back down to earth, but it is, I had to get to that point. You know, it took me a year with my son to really say, like, all right, you know, when I'm with him, I'm with him. And a lot of people talk about being present. But until you, I think, go through some difficulties and, like, you know, you're battling through it and you're like, man, I wish I could be there when he was a week old. Like, you start to think back and you're like, all right, now I really need to be present and really need to do it, you know, the way I feel like is right, which is, you know, to be present mentally and physically. Cause I think a lot of the people that I asked early on, you know, what's your biggest parenting advice? A lot of the business owners, you know, people that were high achievers, you know, athletes, competitors, most of them always say, I was present physically, but I wasn't there mentally. I was somewhere else. And I'm like, man, that's a tough thing to do. Because you're trying to protect them as well. You're trying to be like, I got to go make the money so that, you know, they can have food and have a good future. So it's almost, I look at it as like a light switch now. I'm like, you know, if I'm, you know, with my kids, like, my phone's not in my pocket, like, it's the light switch is off. And obviously you have to consciously develop that. But I think it's a surrender, right? It's like, all right, you know, you got it. Like, you know, let's not negotiate here. Let's just, you know, I'm not giving up, but I'm shutting down the light switch for a little bit so that I can focus on this one thing during this time.
That's some really solid advice that you got. I have sort of had to figure it out through trial and error and through conversations with you, because as, I don't know who said this, but one of my favorite sayings is, you can't ride two horses at the same time. And my mentality, being the bonehead that I am, when I hear something like that, I'm like, yeah, I can. Cause I always juggle different things. I have multiple different, just like you do. We have multiple things going on. We have our main business. We have other projects that we're building up. And so I've always been like, I'm probably, you know, task switching between three, four, five different hats I'm wearing in a given day. But having a child, you can't, like you said, you can't be with them and not be present or be thinking about your business. Cause then you're not doing either thing effectively. So, and it's made me more conscious of how am I doing that in other areas of my life? You know, where am I trying to metaphorically ride two horses in other areas of my life when I should just be focused on one at a time? Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, it's a huge shock of focus. For me, it was like, you know, I got rid of some of the projects I was working on. I tried to really focus on what was getting me the most meaning, self-mastery, and obviously the money, you know, to come along with that. And just started to hone in, because my brain is like, I want to focus on all the things I think is going to leave, you know, the legacy for that, you know, for my kids to have later on. And I'm like, I want to build this whole empire with multiple businesses. And you realize, you're like, when all that is done, right? When my companies are, you know, somewhere else, somebody buys it, you know, it you know, goes out of business, what's left, right? And my kids, you know, hopefully are still going to be there and, you know, be healthy and everything's going to be going forward. And you have to almost cultivate that first to make sure they're healthy. And then if you want them to take something over that you're building, you know, that's great, but they have to be healthy to get there, right? You got to get them there. You got to make sure they're healthy, that they're mentally, you know, developing and things of that nature. So it's almost like a complete reprioritization of, you know, how we think about things, which is, you know, just it was huge for me to just focus on things. And then I started to kind of become more and, you know, what I call kind of being in your truth, or being like speaking what you believe clearly and to somebody directly, as opposed to beating around the bush, because we don't have time for that. It's like, you gotta, I gotta go change a diaper. Like, we gotta get right to it, which helps the other, helps other people trust you. The right people start to trust you more. You start to trust yourself. And I think that's a huge part of the process, is that focus point that some people may not get. You know, it doesn't have to come through parenthood. It can come through a number of difficult transitions. But for me, the focus piece was a huge benefit for them and for me. And I think that's where, you know, being a parent, I look at it such as a promotion, because it's a win-win, right? It's stretching me to become better. But also, you know, it's helping me be better for them, if that makes sense.
That makes perfect sense. And I like how, I was laughing just a moment ago, because you were talking about how you can, having kids allows you to be more intentional with other people and be more direct with other people. I have been using that for everything. Like, hey, how can we turn this 30-minute meeting into a 15-minute meeting? Because I have a newborn, right? Or, hey, I'm sorry, I can't make it out tonight. I can't hang out and have drinks with you guys because I have a newborn. And I'd rather be at home focused on my business anyway. Mm-hmm. But can I ask you a question, Greg? I know this is your interview, but
Definitely.
And you know me, I'm always over here taking notes. You can't see it. I actually have notes in here. When I speak to intelligent people, or I'm on a podcast, I'm always taking notes. But you said, when you're evaluating what needs to stay or go in your life, you work on, or you look at three areas: meaning, self-mastery, and money. Mm-hmm. So to me, meaning and money, pretty straightforward. How do you define self-mastery though? Because I had to write these down, like the three M's. This is good. I'm going to take this.
Yeah. So to me, self-mastery is the internal dark work that we're all going through, like the things we have to confront internally. For me, becoming a business owner was, I look at kind of like three phases in my life that have required me to up-level self-mastery wise. It was like getting out of baseball, lost a sibling. So that was like, I had to stretch on what life was, like what life meant with the people that you care about, like being conscious, being intentional. And then starting a business was one of those where I almost had to lay out like all of the things that I was bad at, you know, all the things I was good at, and say, like, I have to be honest with myself in order to overall trust myself, to build trust with others. So self-mastery to me is a continual journey that requires us to stretch ourselves to really get to the core of who we are and who we're not. And that's been critical for me. A lot of people talk about like personal growth, self-development, things of that nature. But to me, self-mastery is mastery of the self. And I think it's not somebody telling you like, here's the 10 steps to take. It's you looking internally and finding like what's right for you. It's not somebody saying, this is how you should be successful and live. It's really the, you know, you have to find it, right? Nobody's going to find it for you. You know, nobody's coming to save you. And to me, self-mastery is the work that is required to get to that level that we're constantly working on. But there are, I think, phases in our lives, and parenthood's one of those, where if you don't know yourself, you may not know how to parent correctly, or you don't know, you know, what you want to instill in your kid. If you don't know what struggles you went through and are able to contextualize those and do what Anthony Trucks calls the dark work, in order to get there.
I like that. I like how you, first of all, I didn't know you had lost a sibling. We're going to have to talk about that at some point. I did not know that about you. So I just learned something new. When you talked about the dark work though, to your point, most people, when we talk about self-mastery, it's like you said, the 10 steps to do this, or it's always positivity focused. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but being willing to look at those parts of yourself that are not so great and improve upon those, I feel like goes a long way. And when you were sharing that, it made me think of, like, I used to be a stoner, and to me, I would justify it by saying, well, I'm still getting work done. Like, you know, I can be high and be functional. But ultimately, I came to the realization that it was making me lazy. And I know that's not the case for everyone, but for me, at a certain point in my life, based on the goals I wanted to hit, it's like, oh, I'm having a little bit of trouble getting out of bed as early as I want to because I was high last night. Or I should be working on something that I just thought of, but oh, I'm high right now, so I can't do that. I'll do it later. And just eliminating like weed from my life made a big difference for me. I've noticed that over the past few years, just like not touching it at all. And I don't drink either. So anyway, I don't know where I was going with that, but I like how you define self-mastery. That was awesome.
Yeah. I've been in the same boat, man. I'll call Mary Jane. and it was as an athlete, it was my way of relaxing, right? It was a way to soothe my body. And when I look back, it was just me, you know, pushing down that self-mastery work, because I was like, there's stuff there, but if I just go have this vice and have, you know, fun with my friends and do X, I don't have to think about it, which was the easy button. But I eventually, you know, eventually things kind of get so compacted that they blow up. And for me, I had a couple moments where it was like, if you don't confront this, you know, your health is going to, you know, you're either going to, you know, pass away because your health is deteriorating, or, you know, you're just going to ruin everything that you're, you know, trying to do in your life. And, you know, you see examples like that, you know, everywhere. And I just had to make a choice. It sounds like you made that choice at one time. But I think there's probably people listening in today that are in that phase and they're like, there's no way out. And I think there really is. And I needed other people around me to almost like see it. But when somebody cares about you, a lot of times they're not going to mention what seems like a norm, right? Like, it's not like we're doing, you know, crack cocaine, or like, we're not doing like meth on the corner. These are societally acceptable vices, right? That a lot of people do, that, you know, they're legal, right? In a lot of states. So it's one of those things where people aren't going to be like, you know, Greg, Taj, like, don't do that because it's bad for you. Like, they're going to be like, oh, you know, it's all good. But that's that hard internal work, that until that light switch goes off in us that we need to make a change, we typically don't change until that happens.
Amen, brother. And I know somebody listening to this, because when I would hear people, like, weed was a harder one for me to kick because I could justify it, you know, like alcohol, oh, that's poison. It's bad for you. Weed, it's natural. It grows from the earth. That's great. Yeah, that's true. But when I would hear someone in the past be like, hey, you shouldn't smoke weed, I'd be like, that person doesn't know what they're talking about. I can smoke weed and still live my life. But to anybody listening right now, I just would challenge you, like I did, to just take like a week or two off from smoking or eating edibles and just kind of see how you feel in terms of like your sleep quality, or, you know, the biggest thing for me was like, how do I fill that time that I would have been high, like watching or listening to music, or, you know, watching TV or BSing? It's filled with now like either resting or like productivity. And that was the biggest thing for me. Yeah. It's like, I would find myself in a moment of being like hanging out with my wife and I would get paranoid or something, and it might lead to an argument. And it was like, man, if I didn't smoke, we'd probably be having a great time right now. But because I got high and got paranoid, the energy is weird because of me. I'm making it weird. So,
yeah, man, there's a lot there to unpack, because I think a lot of athletes become, you know, functional high or functional, you know, drinkers because of everything we put our bodies through. And most of the time the endorphins we're getting give us a type of high that we have to control on the field and like make sure our bodies are stable. And obviously we're in good shape, so it's not like making us, you know, fall out or, you know, do anything crazy. And that becomes like a blanket, right? It's like, oh, I'm functional. I'm good to go. Like I can, you know, I can defend my kids. I can, you know, drive. I can, you know, do my work. I can do what I need to do. But you realize when you give yourself that break, how much better you are, you know, for yourself and for those around you. And that's what you just hit on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like the blanket analogy, because you talked earlier about numbing. Yeah. I was for sure using it to numb myself or as an escape. And so at a certain point, back to what you were saying about self-mastery and doing the dark work, I had to really ask myself the question of, why do you need an escape? Like, do you need every night you need some sort of escape? Is your life that bad? Or maybe you need to change up your life to the point where you don't feel the need to escape so much from your own life using substances. So
yeah, got to change something to if you're asking yourself, yeah, what are you escaping from? I think that's a key question. And, you know, it's, am I trying to escape? And if the answer is yes, what are you escaping from? Right. And then I think that gets to, those are probably the initial questions that I had to ask myself when I was going through that transition. Then I was like, man, I'm escaping from not saying what I need to say to this person, or I'm escaping from this feeling of, you know, not having sports in my life anymore, or escaping from a tough day at work, or things of that nature. And I'm like, was today really that tough? Like, I'm sure there was somebody next door that had a worse day. You know, I have it pretty good. And yes, you know, so I think, yeah, there's a, you know, that's a key point. I think those types of transitions, I think, accelerate our self-mastery journey when I look at it, because those are things that come internal, right? It's not the external expectation of the world around you changes. You're changing your internal standards. So I think about expectations as what the world puts on us, and then standards we have to build internally. And they're only things that there, that's a bar that we can set. And if we don't set it, then we just take on the expectations of the outside world. Then we're kind of conforming and all these other type of words that people use, but that's kind of like outsourcing your life to other people. And, you know, a lot of people don't like outsourcing, but they're doing it unconsciously.
I don't even have anything to say to that, man. You were just dropping gems. I had to write down standards. What did you say? Standards need to be built internally?
Or? Yeah, standards are the internal, you know, your internal expectations and what you live up to, you know, inside out. I say life's an inside job, and expectations are what the world puts on you. Oftentimes people think of expectations as, you know, this is what you expect of the world. But a lot of times, you know, as we go through our business, personal life, relationships, we are trying to align with other people's expectations to make them happy, which oftentimes, you know, can hurt us if we're not surrounded by the right people and things of that nature. So I think those standards and the expectations are constantly coming against each other. Oftentimes the expectations, you know, kind of destroy the internal standards because we want validation. We want confirmation that we're doing the right thing in the outside world. That's why you see, you know, a lot of people who are looked at as like, you know, the outliers or the, you know, the athletes that are, you know, maybe not friends with everybody, but they are the ones that, you know, go to the next level, like the Kobe's, the LeBron's, like they kind of shake things up in their generation to a point where most people are like, that's wrong. And then they're like, holy cow, that's right. Cause you know, he got to that place and was able to impact this many people, but it took a little bit of friction to get there. And that's, in my mind, the standards expectation battle that they were facing that allowed them to push forward. Cause they were like, this is a standard I have. Like, I'm not going to treat other people bad just because I'm in this position. Or I think it was Kobe who mentioned something where he was like, I have, you know, his ankle was hurt, and he's like, I have to go out there tonight because this might be the only time these people in the stands get to see me. And the expectations of his coaches and the ownership was like, no, you can't go out because we're paying you a bunch of money. And he's like, I'm here for them. And that was one of his standards that he had to carry out. And I kind of look at that as a small microcosm for every decision we make in our lives is so focused on, or should be focused on, the standards we've set internally, consciously.
Man, I'm stealing that from you, Greg, but I'm going to give you credit for it though. Right. So if I, next time I'm speaking to where I'm going to talk about how your standards need to be created, as my man, Greg Tomchick says, your standards are created internally. That was good, man. That was fire. You just introduced a new concept to the world right there. Standards versus expectations. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's a keynote right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. No, you're happy to impart it on you. One of the things I wanted to chat through, we've kind of hit on it a little bit, but through the transition you're going through as a parent, it seems like some of your creative outlets have come back up with the music. You know, I checked that out. What was the birthing of that? Was that just a focus thing, or it was like, this is something I enjoy, and you know, it's an area I want to focus on, and that came from, you know, kind of taking a step back from some of the other things you were doing that maybe didn't serve you at such a high level?
I've been working on music for a long time. I've always enjoyed creating music. Like, I love music so much that it got to the point where I wanted to create something, right? And I've been doing that since. And before I get into this whole background, like, I want to share that the reason I make music, yes, it's a creative outlet. Yes, I enjoy it. But these days, the reason I'm deciding to put it out is because, well, it's twofold, actually, because I really think some of the things that I'm speaking about, I'm as honest and candid as you and I both are when we're having these conversations about, you know, like in this last EP I released, I'm talking about my fears about becoming a father. Am I going to be able to provide? I'm also talking about some of the joys of being a father and just like real ups and downs of entrepreneurship or just trying to like make yourself better or improve your life circumstances. So I'm talking about real things that I know people could relate to. So I decided to put it out, even though I've been working on music for all these years and not really releasing anything, just because coming back to my son, making me aware of my own mortality, it's like, I'm going to be, you know, I don't want to like go to the grave and I've never released anything that could potentially help someone. So I'm not really doing it to like, you know, self-aggrandize. It's more just about, I made this, I enjoy it. I feel that it could help someone. So let me put it out. And I think for a long time I was afraid of like being judged, and I'm a perfectionist too. So like even now I listen back to the EP that I released and it's out in the world now. It's on iTunes or Apple Music and Spotify and everywhere else in the world. And I listen to it and I'm like, ah, man, I wish I would have changed this or done this. But at a certain point, if I would have continued on that path, it wouldn't be out. So I have to learn back to surrender to say, this is good enough. I'm happy with this. Let me release it. Otherwise, I'll keep tinkering with it for years and years. And I think the timing of it is perfect too, because I had music that I had recorded back when I was going through that transition, when I was 22, 23, 24. And I would be so embarrassed if that music was out in the world right now. Not just because of the quality, but because like the quality of how the music sounds, but also the subject matter. I was literally just, all I was doing was drinking and partying and like fresh out of college. So the subject matter was popping bottles, being in the club, chasing women. There's nothing of substance. It's like stuff that's already out there and stuff you hear every day versus like now I'm talking about things from a man who has lived and just had a son, and I can give perspectives that I think will resonate with a lot of people. So, but yeah, man, that's why I decided to like put the music out now, and I have a lot more coming soon.
I love that. Yeah, I've checked it out. Definitely some fire beats. I recommend people checking out. And I love how you're talking about something that connects with people's hearts and souls, because a lot of music today is all, you know, it's all kind of like, it's like beats and a lot of mumbling because it's, because it's all about the vibe and the beat, right? That's where music's, you know, not more trendy music is headed. And I think about like, you know, MGK or Tupac or Biggie, like I think about people who were trying to create global change by their music, right? They're trying to create community change and give people messages, whether they're hidden or not hidden. And I think that's like the power, the magic of music is like giving experience through something that people can vibe to and can connect with other people on. And I think that's exactly what, you know, what you're doing. In essence, and it's something that you enjoy. So it's a win-win at the same time. And it's cool that you put it out when you, you know, when you had your kid. With my first book, I put it out like 2 months after I had my kid, because when I was going through the, you know, when my wife was pregnant at the time, that's like, it kind of shocked me into like, I need something that I can leave behind, whether it's for this kid or for somebody else. And I heard a song the other day. I was like, my biggest fear is, you know, dying and not having anything for people to remember me by. Like, even if it's, you know, it's not going to be my business. Like, people aren't going to be like, oh, we love Greg because of Valor. Like, it's not going to be the business piece. It's going to be how I made them feel. And it's cool that, you know, music is one of those things. I mean, I don't have that talent, but the connection you can make with music, you know, it's always out there, and you can really express how you want to make people feel, you know, through the melody, through the beat, through the words you're using. I think about it like it's like a rhythmic speech, right? To some extent. Like, I think about giving a speech to, you know, thousands of people in an audience, and I'm like, if I can feel the connection I'm making to them. And I think through each song, you know, you're doing that in essence. I don't know if you look at it like that, but
I do now. I'm over here like rhythmic speech. I never did think about it like that before. Yeah. That's incredible. That might be the next album name. I'm gonna have to put you in the album credits, man. Rhythmic speech, that's fire. Yeah. My goodness, maybe you are a rapper, man. Maybe you do have some musical talent. You dropped bars over here right now. I'm like, as soon as I heard that, I was like, a rhythmic speech. I started looking out the window at the birds. I was like, I never thought about it like that before. That's that's really what it is. That's incredible.
put me on the spot. make the feature.
I'm gonna send you some beats, man.
How has you've had multiple communities throughout, you know, your development with sports, you know, with your local community that you grew up in, you know, moving to Texas, you know, the community you've built around, you know, the companies you've built, you know, what do you think at the core of communities that and individuals in those communities can do better to help people through transition, right? You've been through transition out of sports, transitions in business, parenthood. Is there anything that you look at from a, you know, leader in a community or a community overall can do better to support people, you know, through transitions, you know, whether, you know, no matter what that transition is?
I think as a leader, the best thing you can do, it may sound like an oversimplification, but I think the best thing you can do as a leader is let people know that you're available to help them. And I think kind of opening that door, because when I think about myself, and I know we've talked about this, this is probably the case for you, whether you're an athlete transitioning or, you know, a business person transit, whatever the case may be, if you feel like you're going into a place of uncertainty and you don't really know what to do, it's helpful to be able to talk to someone who has gone ahead of you on that path and can help guide you. And so when I think about what I needed most was, it didn't even have to be like a football player. It could just have been any former athlete. It could have been a man or a woman, someone to say, hey, Tosh, I know you're struggling right now because you just finished playing football and you don't really know who you are, where you want to go or what you want to do. And you're having all these emotions. I went through the same thing. And this is how I started to figure it out. And this is the approach that I would use. So I'd say as a leader, the main thing you can do is if you see someone who is going through a transition and you know that, oh, that's a transition that I went through at one point in my life, maybe I can just tell them, hey, how's your transition with XYZ going? Right? Like even fatherhood or parenthood, you talked about people who gave you great parenting advice. Like if I see a guy who's younger than me or maybe even the same age and, you know, he's having his first kid, I might say, hey man, how's fatherhood? For me, this was my experience. And that kind of opens the door to be like, if this person is struggling with something, then they know, or I can let them know that I'm a resource and I'm available to help them. So I'd say just open up the door and let them know that you've been through it. And that's the best way to help someone through transition. So,
yeah, that's huge. I think about that in a lot of different levels, whether it's community leadership, industry leadership, team leadership. Like there's so many labels people put on leaders, but I think it's people that are like experienced leaders. They talk about their experiences continually. And they're like, if you're on at any point in this experience I've had, you know, we can plug in, have a one-to-one or group conversation to, so I can share what I went through. And that gives you a leg up. It's a lot of people say like thought leadership and things of that nature, but I think the best conversations are centered around experience, right? Not necessarily like, hey, I have this certification or I'm this label in this company. Like those are almost like, it's kind of like smoke and mirrors when I think at the core, it's really, you have this unique experience. Everybody has that within themselves, no matter what they've accomplished. And being able to share that, I think makes you a leader. Even if everybody doesn't value it, there's going to be one person, you know, or two people in that audience that are like, that's exactly what I'm going through. I need to talk to you. I need to talk to you now. And I think not enough people build a business around that. Like, one of the things I hear a lot is you're most qualified to serve, you know, yourself 5 years ago or something of that nature. But at its core, if you do the hard self-mastery work and think about your story, there's probably multiple businesses within that. And a business is just connecting somebody with something they need and they give you something that's going to help you be better off. So it's, you know, it's made a lot of, you know, capitalism makes it kind of too focused on the money. But if you have an experience you've already had, you can talk about it to somebody. And then they pay you for it because it benefits their life in 10x, you know, what they pay for it, then that's a good win-win transaction, and opportunity for both people. And I think when I think about how business started, I think that was at its core, you know, people sharing their experiences and then people saying, all right, here's, you know, here's a dollar because you shared that and it benefited me. I'm going to go use it.
So. Right. Exactly. Yeah. It's the oldest form of transaction. Here's a can of beans. Thank you for it. There was a lot of wisdom in what you just shared, but something that stood out to me that I want to pull out from that is how you said, as a leader, you were kind of talking about letting people know, like, hey, if you are having this experience, let's talk about that. I'm here to serve you in that capacity because I've been through that as well. But I like how you made the distinction between like, and we can do that in like a one-on-one or group setting, because I think some people may not be as prone to like talk to someone one-on-one. They may feel more comfortable in a group setting and vice versa. Some people are not comfortable sharing personal things that they're going through in front of a group. They prefer the one-on-one. So, and when I think about some of the best experiences that I've had in terms of like breakthroughs and people helping me with things that I've gone through, it's been like someone helped me one-on-one, because in groups, I'm kind of like, I'm usually the last person to share. I'm kind of trying to get a feel for what's going on before I say anything. But if it's one-on-one, I can just like let loose and share what's on my mind and allow that person to kind of pour back into me. And then from that standpoint, if I were to be with that same person in a group after I've had the one-on-one, then I'm more likely to talk about, hey, when I had my one-on-one with this person, this is what we shared, and I can bring it to the group and we can all kind of trade ideas and share. So mm-hmm. I think that's important for leaders to be able to offer both and make sure that you're catering to all people to make sure that they get what they need. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that at the core is what I think a lot of leaders are struggling with, like having these performance improvement plans and things of that nature, is they're not connecting with their people. I see this all the time, you know, just because we have to look deep into a company. It's like your culture is disrupted because you haven't asked, you know, a person that's on the other side of the table, you know, hey, what are you looking for? What do you need? Like, what are you going through right now, personally and professionally, that I can help you with? It's more of like, here's what you've done, here's what you need to do better in the future, and you know, good luck kind of thing. So there's none of that one-on-one connection that needs to take place to help people improve, which mm-hmm. I think companies are trying to figure out. But you know, I saw that mostly at, you know, in the sports world, was like, how'd you sleep last night, you know, what's going on? And you know, they do like daily check-ins, and it was always kind of a pain. You know, to me, it was kind of a pain. It seemed like a pain because they were asking me the same question every day, but different things would come out. I'd be like, hey, you know, I didn't sleep well. You know, my girlfriend broke up with me. It was, you know, bad night, you know, talking to my mom. We got an argument, you know, whatever it was just like, you'd bring different things up and they'd be like, hey, you know, I actually just went, you know, the trainer's like, hey, I just went through a breakup as well. Like, here's something, you know, I'm thinking through, you know, is there something we could talk about deeper? And then it becomes a conversation and you walk away. You're like, that whole weight is off my shoulders because I just was able to relate to somebody.
Mm. Did you have that level of support in college, or are you talking about the pros? Where
they pros. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I was going to say.
College, right? I did have one trainer that would ask it periodically just because it was kind of like a friend type relationship. But mostly in college, it was like get in and get out.
So. Yeah, no, I was going to say, I was going to ask you, like, yeah. I know we're around the same age. I was thinking like, he must be talking about the pros, because in college it was definitely get in, get out. I was like, yeah. I didn't experience any of that. Yeah. Nobody was asking me a thing except why were you late? You know, so
it was probably the money aspect. They were like, if Greg's not feeling well, he's not playing because it's going to impact our money.
That's so. True. That's a good point. But hey, it helped nonetheless.
Yeah, it did.
That's cool.
Yeah. Oh,
definitely. That experience, man. That's awesome. And it's needed.
Excellent. Yeah, man. We could chat about this all day. Definitely have you on again in the future. Extremely proud of you for everything you're doing fatherhood wise and continuing to impact the world, you know, through your businesses, through your music. Definitely recommend everybody checking that out. We'll put the link in the show notes. Get some more views and impact on what you're putting out to the world. Taj, how can people connect with you outside of your music, and you know, what's the direct line to Taj if anyone wants to have a one-on-one conversation with you?
Yeah, thank you, Greg. First and foremost, thank you for having me again on the show. Always enjoy these conversations. We've had so many deep conversations offline that it's great when we can kind of do one live like this. So best way to reach out to me is always tajdeshawn.com. Everything you need there, exactly how it's spelled on the screen. Everything you need is at TajDeshawn.com. My books, my podcast. The music's not up there, but you can just search Taj Deshawn on whatever platform you listen to your music on, Spotify, Apple Music. It's everywhere. It's called Firstborn EP. You'll see a picture of myself with my son on my lap. But yeah, that's the best place to find me. LinkedIn, of course, Instagram. I'm more active on LinkedIn than Instagram. So hit me up. I'm not hard to find. And I really try to get back to people as quickly as possible. So yeah.
Excellent. Perfect, man. Well, the way we like to wrap up the show, and I know you answered this last time, but you know, with where Taj is today, what does connection mean to you?
Connection to me means understanding yourself, understanding who you're connected to. I think I answered this similarly last time. Connected in the sense of whether you're religious or not, what are you connected to that's bigger than you? Whether that's a higher power, other people, being connected to that source, God, the universe, being connected to yourself, understanding where you're at, where you've been, and where you're going. That to me means being connected.
I love it, man. You guys heard it here, Mr. Taj Deshawn. Always a pleasure, and looking forward to continuing the conversation.
Thank you, Greg.